This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 655, brought to you by Harry's. To get your trial shave set, go to Harry's.com/ifanboy right now. That's Harry's.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you.
I listen to you time and time again, while you tell me just what's right. And you tell me a thousand things a day, then sleep somewhere else at night. Going back to Kansas.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week number 655. There's a little crack in my voice there, wasn't there?
We get emotional doing the show. It's been a long time.
I know. Well, it's hard with tears streaming down my face and all this. I am Josh Flanagan. This is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick. And God damn it, I'm just so happy.
We're the Irishest show in the comics dome.
Don't listen, Scotsman. Don't.
It's regional.
I looked all over Ireland for something that said Kilpatrick on it, and that shit did not exist. Which is odd, because Kilpatrick means Church of Patrick, and they're super into Patrick there. So you tell me.
I don't know.
We are iFanboy. Every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week, and then we discuss Gaelic lore.
Or 90s pop culture. But we can do Gaelic lore this week.
We talk about, it'll be a short show, because my my sort of like anecdotal, like, yes, I know this thing, is almost over. I almost already went through my catalog. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, and maybe if we have time, we'll read some listener mail. The idea here is entertainment for someone. I'm not promising who.
It might just be us.
Maybe it will be, you know, maybe it will be entertaining, but not for the right reasons. I don't know. I will tell you that if you haven't read your books and you're like, I don't want to know what happens in them, you should stop listening until after you have, because we will spoil those books for you. We will say what happens in it. Not with malice in mind. No, not because of that, but because in order to properly analyze, discuss, and come to an understanding about them, we're going to have to talk about the details of those books.
It's the cost of doing business.
This is just how it goes.
Yeah.
If I could change it, you know I would.
Sure.
You know, Connor.
Uh-huh.
I've been talking about it for years. How do we do this?
Without talking about the books. I don't know.
It's like the fusion question. No one can solve it. There's just too much extra energy left over.
True. True.
Connor, you have the pick.
I do have the pick, and the pick is The Avengers number 9 or Legacy number 699.
I like that number a lot better.
Jason Aaron, David Marquez, Justin Ponsor, Corey Pettit. And we talked about this with the last issue, number 8, which the big last page reveal was the appearance of Namor, the Submariner, one of our favorite characters. And this issue, I think I said it last week, but this issue might have been my favorite issue. This book's starting to get on a roll. This is a classic Marvel comic. You have Namor confronting King Shark. Is it King Shark? Tiger Shark. Tiger Shark is DC.
Went through that same thing.
Tiger Shark. And also Stingray, who is a character I picture on a cover of a book from the early 90s or late 80s, and I can't remember what book it is. It might be an Iron Man book.
I can see it. I know what you're talking about. It's like he's in the center,
yes,
of the frame, and around them is other characters in this blue green sort of ocean color.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's in my head. Anyway, Namor confronts them and uses his war sharks. This is very much a Jason Aaron situation, very similar to his space sharks, to dispatch Stingray, who's now dead. Anyway, Namor's pissed. He's mad at the surface world. What else is new? He's been mad at the surface world since 1938. And the Avengers go under the sea to talk to him, but he doesn't want to talk. He wants to fight. And I just loved everything about this issue. Although there's one thing I didn't love, and we can discuss after talking about how much fun it was to read.
I'm trying to figure out what it was you did. I don't know that I came across that I thought that would be an obvious pick. I did enjoy it for a lot of reasons. When you picked it, I didn't go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I went, But then the fact that the way that this works, though, is that I read something like that. I enjoyed it. I had a really good time reading it. And I thought the same thing. I was like, there he goes with the sharks again. and I'm fine with that, by the way. I want that to be clear. He might have a problem with Wedge Antilles, but he seems to respect the shark. The shark over the gorilla as a sort of pop culture pulp device, mm-hmm, to me is a better choice.
Sure.
Shark. So there's the war sharks, but also you've got tiger sharks. You got a dual shark thing happening here. And I liked that it was a no holds barred Namor.
The next book we're going to talk about, I think you're not reading anymore, but it was a very similar plot line. It's basically the really tough person taking out the Avengers one on one in their element. And I like seeing Namor in his element, where he's a badass. We've said it for years. It's part of our platform, and we're never going to deny it. I love that he took everyone down basically until he got to Captain America, Marvel fans will know they were together in World War II, and so they have a long history. And I loved the scene where Cap just sort of floats behind him and says, "Stand down. The next person you have to fight is me." And he's like, "I'm not going to fight you." As an old school, Invaders fan, I really loved that sequence.
I liked that because basically this is almost, it's not a recasting of Namor, but it is a reestablishment and has been skewed slightly from where we knew him last. The last I remember seeing Namor sort of regularly would have been in the Illuminati, mm-hmm, where he was sort of heavily involved in wide ranging Marvel Universe stuff. So he was ostensibly a good guy because he was, cast as.
Well, he's the original antihero. So he's always on that line.
But, you know, if you think about, like, the beginning of the Marvel, like, he was attacking Earth. I mean, the land people. He was a terrorist. He was a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
They have floated that line going back and forth, almost like a sort of the way that they do with Lex Luthor a little bit.
I wouldn't say he's quite as villainous as Lex Luthor, but he floats the line between bad and good. He definitely does.
He does, but, you know, in recent years, Luthor really hasn't been a bad guy to anybody except Superman.
I mean, I might put him more in the Loki camp.
Okay, that works too. It's not exactly the same, but it is a thing where, like, it's this malleable character who sort of they use it anyway. So we've got a recasting and even sort of a reestablishment because he does a lot of explaining about who he is, which I don't think is a bad idea.
Well, he hasn't really been around in a while,
right. Which I don't understand.
He's not in the movies.
That's why.
He may not be that familiar to people who have only been reading books for the last 10 years.
So with that in mind, you know, the fact that he still chose to acknowledge the sort of Captain America invaders relationship, I thought was a good move. There was one little bit in here that I noticed that stood out. I don't remember who said it. I think it was Iron Man, but it was something along the lines of, like, I forgot how fast he is in the water.
And yeah.
Like, that is an excellent bit of sort of establishing sort of who he is. I liked his attitude when he's facing Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, everyone in the sea would kill to lay their hands on my bare flesh. And I was like, badass. And then he's like, but don't ever touch me again, which I liked. There was a lot of really good things here.
There were. And so the only thing I felt myself kind of not liking is, and I don't love his costume. I don't think I recognize the fact that his pants are mesh on the side until the last page.
Oh, yeah. Like those yoga.
I get why they did it, but I feel like Namor needs the flat top because it's the dickishest haircut there is.
Well,
and when he has that flat top, he's just even 10 times much more of a dick.
Yeah, but it makes him look like more of an out of touch dork. And I think that this can't look like an out of touch dork.
I don't think it does. He looks like an asshole.
The only thing is he's a little. If anything, I would say he's sort of a little too far.
Yeah, he's they've taken him into, like, romance territory with the flowing hair and the bare chest. I mean,
yeah,
he's
always I don't know if that really, but it might not be mesh. It might just be a pattern. It's like Shocker.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's that.
I lived with it though. This was a thought I had before picking it. This is a thought I had like a day later. I was like, he really needs that hair. I mean, the hair. Name me one pop culture character with a flat top who isn't an asshole. There's probably one out there, but they're mostly on the other side.
Star Fox?
Nope.
Eros?
Well, those aren't really flat tops. Those are the curled.
Oh, you're curled right. Heads. You're right. I'm sorry. I'm reaching. I'm definitely. What about that guy who's on the Shi'ar? He's the strong Centurion.
Centurion. I don't know.
Does he have like a flat top?
Maybe. So the events of the first arc where the Celestial fell to Earth also affected the seas, of course.
I like that.
It fell into the sea and poisoned Atlantis, and now Atlantis is all fucked up. It's a bunch of kids fleed because there's no food, and they ended up dying on a beach because they couldn't breathe the air. He's a half-breed. He's exactly like Aquaman.
Yeah.
And I loved how he killed who were the guys, the murderers. The whole thing was they had taken some rocks and guys captive, and the Avengers were trying to get him out.
Yeah.
And they did, and then they put him in prison, and then and then somehow Namor just flooded their cell with seawater from the toilet and killed them. I love that because he's ruthless.
He murdered. Is it the Ray, the Manta Ray,
Stingray.
Whatever he is? He murdered him.
Yeah, with sharks.
Like that's pretty hard to come back from. He also punches the bejesus at him. But to me, the best page in this though, it's on page 3, the best panel. Namor starts to punch him, and on the last second to last panel of the page. Tiger Shark is overwhelmed. He's like, whoa. Tiger Shark looks concerned. And he was just trying to bite the guy in half moments ago. But the punching was too much for him.
Yeah, brutal.
Yeah.
It's just fun. And in the same way that Jason Aaron's really good at writing the Asgardians, Namor is very similar. The sort of pompous royalty. And so he's very good at this, and so, of course, they announced there's going to be an Invaders book, so that's probably why they brought this all back. Now Namor has his own little team, the Defenders of the Deep.
That was kind of dumb, but...
Not the greatest name, especially since there's already Defenders.
Yeah.
It's got Tiger Shark and...
Other fish characters.
Fish people.
There's a crab folk.
There's some guy wearing an orca as a suit.
I don't know, because that's not, there's a DC version of that. I've seen this character. I've seen all these characters, but I don't know their names. You know what I love about this more than anything?
What?
Ghost Rider is ridiculous. And this takes, in this book and also the book we're going to be talking about after this, he's ridiculous. He's driving his car on the seafloor. He drives his car everywhere, and it doesn't make any sense, and they just go with it. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, it's great. I really wanted to love this book. I didn't love it out of the gate, but I'm loving it now.
It's an Avengers book, you know, like, and I haven't felt like I've had Avengers book that's been sort of Avenge-worthy in a while.
For sure. And that made me really happy. I kept coming back to it whenever I read anything else, and I just looked at that cover with Namor on it, and I was like, yes, this is everything I want. He's like Kang, who also showed up this week somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He's a classic Marvel character.
It's true. Namor and Kang are the two sort of big missing people from the movies.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like
the real roots Marvel characters.
I'm surprised they haven't used Kang yet.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the Immortal Hulk #7. This is a book. There's some books where I'm like, do I like this book?
Yeah.
Do I want to keep reading it? And then I read it and I enjoy it. This is Al Ewing and Joe Bennett, as always. And similarly to the Avengers, this is Hulk versus the Avengers, where he's obviously been out of control and they've come to stop him. And it's very similar. There's a lot of one-on-one fights where he takes everybody out. Well, I liked the first scene a lot where the Hulk yes. was like, it was like a Category 5 storm. Everyone had to evacuate very quickly. And then their house gets destroyed, this family that we see in the beginning. I like that scene a lot. I also like that the girl has a little classic Secret Wars Iron Man toy.
Oh, that's the good... Well, no. Well, Era, but that toy that you were talking about had the knee joints.
No, he has the knee joints, but it's the same suit.
Yeah.
Hulk is a hard character because you don't want to be too powerful, even though he's the most powerful.
And this isn't the book for you.
No, it's a tough line because it has to be compelling. There has to be, otherwise it's not. It's even worse than the Superman problem because Superman at least has a moral compass that's guiding his power. If you've got this rage monster that can't be stopped by anybody, then there's really no drama in the story. So then it's a hard line to ride, is what I'm saying. It was good though. This might be my favorite Hulk issue.
Yeah, I think because it did set the table a little bit where it sort of established where we were with this Hulk and what the difference is and where he is in the world. Because for a little while, it was almost like, is this an Elseworlds Hulk thing?
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of firmly plants him back in the Marvel Universe. I liked that it's a little like the movies in that like they're very challenged by the Hulk. And I think that that works really well. And then it's going to almost seem antithetical because it seems inconsistent. It's inconsistent, though, because the characterizations of this are far off from the other book we just talked about.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
She-Hulk very specifically is, you know, like, but I kind of like that they're just doing their thing. I really liked the moral logistics of what was happening here.
Mm.
I mean, it was a heavy-handed, like, should we use Project Helios? No, let's not. Well, should we? You know, they clear everybody out. You know, they wrecked everybody's houses, you know?
Yeah.
They made that choice. They didn't let anybody get hurt, so there was no casualty in that
way. They just
way.
Bankrupted everyone.
Yeah, basically.
So what did you think of the ending? Because this has ostensibly been a horror book.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing was they shoot him with this giant ray gun from space, and he's dead, supposedly, although Hulk can't die. And the next thing we see is he wakes up upside down. There's a guy talking to him on one of those douchey hoverboards. And the reveal is that Hulk's various body parts are in jars.
Mm-hmm.
And his head is upside down. That's why he's seeing upside down. This is the part where it gets a little dicey for me. I know he can't die, but it's like, this is a little weird.
But they bring it back to the horror thing. I mean, to me, Hulk books have very rarely held me for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is going to be sort of experimental, as long as it remains interesting, I don't really care what they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little like the Moon Knight book, really. I think that I think this shares something with that. Like, I don't know what they're going to do here because there don't seem to be any rules. And I find that intriguing because with so many other books, it's so easy to see what's going to happen, to know how things are going to go. Like, mm-hmm. we don't know. Basically, at one point, you know, Thor just is like, he's basically a god now because he's so angry and he's so smart and it's built up and the gamma and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it risks being ridiculous, but it's kind of okay, because where else are you going to do that than in a Hulk comic book?
Right.
You know, like, if you want to suggest a place that has no ceiling, this is the place. And it, again, as long as it's interesting, as long as it's well done, as long as I want to keep reading it, then that's fine, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I like him a little bit under this level, but I'm enjoying this for now.
Yeah, like, in this context, in this story, I don't think you keep him like this. You're just telling this story right now, and I think it works like that.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, I really liked this issue of Catwoman a lot. This was one of my favorite books of the week. Catwoman number 4, Joelle Jones, art by Fernando Blanco, mostly, and some Joelle Jones are on pencils as well. This was an issue in which we get a glimpse into... It's not an origin issue, but it's a glimpse into Selina's past with her, I guess, foster family.
How much of this do we know?
I don't know any of this.
Do you know she had a sister?
No.
Okay.
So on all the misery she brought along to these people just by being Catwoman. Mm-hmm. I thought this was really good. Joelle Jones is doing something really interesting with Selina right now. Mm-hmm. Like Namor, like Hulk, it's kind of a tough character because she does ride the line, although she doesn't...
Yeah.
Murder people, but she is a criminal, basically, who does occasionally good things. And I just like the character study here of Selina through the years, from a little kid to a teenager to where she is now.
I think it was good. This is one of those books for me that I am wondering, like, do I enjoy this? And I say that, like, completely accepting the fact that it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well drawn. I'm not entirely sure I care.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not entirely sure... that this is a good idea for the character long term. I realize, like, I don't know anything about the character, and I always kind of like that. So the more that you sort of go into the background and you explore the psychology or whatever, it's so easy to fall into sort of tropes. That being said, I liked the setup of that flashback story.
Yeah.
You know, where she you know, has that sense of self-righteousness but no boundaries, basically.
Right.
And the fat kid and the people picking on him, and the fact they have the scary makeup on, you know, all that was kind of interesting. And she has a gun and just doesn't give a shit. Like, it all adds up. The bits where the Skull character, you know who that is?
Yeah. He's a crime boss in Gotham.
You know, like, that was a bit much. Like, popping the eye out and then the torture and everything. I was like, all right, it's a bit much. You know, if you think about it. Like, is this a? I mean, you're firmly like that. Firmly puts this book in a camp for a certain kind of reader.
We don't know why any of that happened.
No,
I mean, obviously he was torturing Selina's sister and her husband to get to Selina. So, and then Selina's sister in the present is catatonic, basically, in a wheelchair because of the Black Skull. No, Black Mask. Because of Black Mask's torturing. But we don't know more than that. And there's clearly something happening because someone kidnaps the sister at the end or does something to her with medicine. So there's a lot we don't know yet. But
Did we finish off the last arc with the lady?
Well, the arc. Yeah, didn't we?
I don't remember. I read it, but not the week that I was supposed to. And I feel like I was left a little open ended. But no, she went to the crazy preacher sex party.
Yeah. Well, I guess she's still in the background, I guess.
Yeah, but basically it was don't fuck with me. Right. And then I guess that was it. But I feel like that's got to come back around.
The thing is, eventually all the stuff just becomes as useful as needed. Like, Catwoman before in the 90s had a long-running solo series. I don't remember anything about that series.
Yeah. I think as needed is totally, like if they get through this and they don't want to get rid of it, they'll get rid of it.
Farmhand number 4, Rob Guillory's book, and that's another one where I'm like, am I liking this? I can't tell, but then I really liked this issue a lot. I had that happen like 5 times to me this week with books I was on the fence about.
You're clearly looking for the way out.
Well, I mean, you know, you talked about cutting books, and we read a lot of books, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, do I like it? I don't know. Some of the books I know I like, and some books I'm not sure about. But this one, this was my favorite one so far.
I don't know if...
Even though I'm not entirely sold on it, this was my favorite
one. I think that it's tough to get your mind around because it looks just like Chew.
Yeah.
But it's not Chew, and it's a different kind of thing. And you know, to be fair, I think Rob is feeling his way through it too.
Yeah.
You know, so...
It doesn't just look like Chew. It's just, and this is not a criticism, but it has the same sort of jokes in the background, all that stuff. So,
yeah, and that's just his, you know, his style, basically. there's a lot of things to like about it, but I think, you know, four issues in, I don't entirely know what this is because I don't feel like the scene is set.
There's a lot happening, but I don't know what any of it. And it's fine. I don't if it's a long running series, I don't necessarily need to know it all in issue four. But I think at some points you'll have to be a little bit clearer about what I mean. There's this farm where they grow body parts. We've talked about this before. There's zombie trees, and in this issue we find out that the sister of the main character has been sent by the government to spy on this entire operation. There's a election, which I thought was the funniest bit here. The campaign ads that kept interrupting the story. Yeah.
I think that you're right. There's a lot of moving pieces, and I think that it's a little hard to figure out where we're focusing because we spent time, I think, in the last issue with the kids, mm-hmm. and we've spent time with the dad, who is Rob, and then you know right. now we're with the sister. Like, we are still setting the stage to a certain extent, so I don't feel like we have a lot of forward motion in terms of here's what the story is, and here's what. You know, here's where we're going, or not even where we're going, but to sort of like, wow, where are we going next? Because I know what just happened. I still feel like we're setting the stage a little slowly, but I find it interesting because I have no idea what this is. I have no idea what to expect, and it's kind of interesting in that. And you know, I want to see what Rob does with it. I'm really interested in that part.
Yeah, I'm still looking for the overall. I mean, because this is, you know, it's one of those image books. What is the overall story of this?
Yeah.
It's not one of those things where it's a bunch of characters living in a world and it's vignettes. There's a story. We just don't know what it is yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a David Simon show, but it's,
that's, I understand. I get, it's exactly that kind of thing. I mean, that's giving him a lot of credit, but
no, what I'm saying is it's not like set up as just live with all these characters. It is there's clearly a story. I just don't know what it is yet.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Agree. I'm enjoying it. I don't know how much yet. I think I'm just sort of taking it in, but it's definitely a thing that I can't quite put my, if you were to ask me to describe it, I could tell you what it is, but I don't, you know, that's just the surface of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. Hey, so the Wildstorm, Michael Cray, number 12 came out. This is the last issue of this. We used to call this a maxi series.
Yeah.
It was 12 issues. This is there was an ending. I don't know if they'll do more or not. And finally, after I finished reading it, I thought, is this Michael Cray a real character? And so I looked him up, and it is. It's a character called Deathblow, which was one of the sort of Wildstorm. I was like,
one
did you
of those Jim
up?
Lee's characters.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But again, it's part of the Wildstorm, which is originally Warren Ellis's sort of reimagining of the Wildstorm universe. But in this, I've talked about it a lot, but basically it crosses over into a version of the DC universe where pretty much all of the superheroes are bad guys. And the last few issues have focused on John Constantine and Wonder Woman, her ending up being the big baddie, and Constantine very nicely, like originally seeming really evil and then sort of being sort of that chaotic element. And at the end, you know, you find out that one of the alien races, the Caribum or the, I forget, the Wildstorm alien races, is like living inside Michael Cray, you know, and he has to share the space with him. But really what this book was, it was the mainstream coming out of Brian Hill.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to reading this in the collection that comes out. Because you talked about it, and then I was like, well, I'm too far behind. I'll just wait and get it all.
Well, it's one of those things. Like, I started reading it. I didn't have any context for it. I didn't know who Brian Hill was. I know now he did a long run on the Top Cow book Postal.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard of that book. That book's been around. But as I kept going, like, at first I thought this is ridiculous. And then as I kept going, I go, this is actually pretty good. Like, this is a writer who has, like, Hill has a pretty strong voice. This is a launching pad. Other people must have noticed this too, because his name has popped up a lot more since this book started a year ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, he did a short run on Detective. Now he's got The Outsiders coming out soon. So
he just did some Marvel stuff. He did one of the What Ifs that came out last week. Another thing, like,
I haven't read a lot, but I've been impressed with what I have read. So I'm looking.
It's
I'll,
the start
I'll check
of this moment.
Outsiders.
Yeah, and he's definitely like. He's got a real, there's a real strong sense of character going on in the background. In fact, there is a lot of, you know, sort of introspection of the main characters in this really thoughtful exploration of character and motivation and what's sort of going on beneath the surface, and done pretty dang eloquently. So, you know, this is a guy, I think you're going to start to see his name. His moment is starting now. He's going to be, you know, within the next couple of years, he'll probably take over a couple of runs. And this was the thing that got him started. And after completing and going through, I see why. You know, like you see that creator forming.
Right.
And Stephen Harris and Dexter Vines on art did a really good job with what it was. This is sort of alternate view of these DC heroes as not even villains, really, as more as monsters. A lot of interesting ideas, but a really strong through line throughout the whole thing. And I thought it ended pretty strongly. It was good. It was like all that horror-y hero stuff. And then at the same time, almost like not a private eye, but just like a sort of one man on a journey kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was really consistent all the way through.
Cool.
It was good. Oh, you know what I didn't do today?
Shave.
I didn't shave. I needed to.
Bathe, shave.
I did bathe. I showered.
Eat.
I forgot. I did skip breakfast. I dropped my kids off, and then I went and I
picked your kids up.
No, I dropped them off in the morning, and then I just had coffee. I didn't eat any breakfast at all.
I see.
But what I need to do is shave, because I get that stuff right along the neck. You know,
yes.
where if you let it, it's itchy and it's uncomfortable. And the thing about Harry's is it takes care of that. And I've said this before, but it really does bear repeating. Like, I don't get the razor bumps. I don't get the irritated skin. I don't do a couple of reasons. One, those blades are really good and sharp, and there's not too many blades. There's enough blades.
Exactly the right amount of blades.
Exactly. It's not so many blades. But also, they're affordable enough that I am not trying to get a little extra out of them, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm like, well, I can make this last a little longer. That always leads to skin problems.
When it turns to rust color and
the
blade starts flaking off.
So I don't get that with the Harry's. And as a result of that, like, it really is always a good non-dramatic shave, which is what I want. I want it to just do the job and be done, and then I'll come back when it's time to go again.
Do the thing you're good at. Don't try to be everything.
Yes.
Just be the thing, which is being a great blade.
Just do the thing, which is what you want out of that.
Yeah.
Comfy handle, you know, the whole, it doesn't slip. That I cannot stress, because I was here for Harry's Mark One with the smooth blade. Nothing wrong with it. But when we go to sort of the soft touch grippy blade, world of difference.
The first Mark One, beautiful. I still have mine in the drawer just in case.
I do too.
But, you know, it did slip out a couple times, and that's not their fault. It's
the
just
rubberized texture. It's a little more confidence. Right. I didn't even know I needed this, but I'm glad it's here.
Yep.
So there it is. Harry's, they stand behind the quality of their blades. We were just talking about that, and they know that switching razors is not an easy decision, so they created this trial offer that if you're listening out there, you've been hearing these ads, you've been thinking, is it time that I do this? It is. You need to go to harrys.com/ifanboy. You're going to get the trial shave set with that. So that's what you should be doing if you have it. That's a $13 trial set value. It comes with everything you need. You've got a weighted ergonomic handle. We were just talking about that. The 5-blade razor, no more, no less. The lubricating strip, that also did not exist on the early version. The lubricating strip came along later. The trimmer blade, again, it was an improvement they made. So they are innovating as they move forward, but not adding 9, 10, 15, 70 blades.
Right.
That's not what's happening. You get a rich lathering shave gel along with that. And of course, the coveted travel blade cover, which is now making its way onto our social media feeds as people begin to discover and talk about it as well, which I could not be more pleased with. So make sure you check that out. So as you know, great shave comes down to great blades. It's sharp, durable steel. It lasts. But if you need to go to the next one, it's still affordable, like we said, not overly expensive. They bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. They're selling directly you over the internet, so that makes them a little more affordable. But I've also seen them in the Walmarts. I've seen them in the Targets.
Yep.
Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than a leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. And if you don't love the shave that it gives you, let them know within 30 days, and they will give you a full refund for that. So get over to harrys.com/ifanboy, redeem that trial set. Again, it's if you go to Target or Walmart, that's not going to work. So, you know, I'm saying go to harrys.com/ifanboy. And you know, that way they know that we are the ones who sent you. And also, you don't have to go anywhere. Do what you need to. Get the razor is the important thing, is what I'm saying. So thank you, Harry's.
Superman number 4 could have been picked solely on the Adam Hughes variant cover.
I have to go check the. You vamp while I go look at
page
that.
Page 3 is the variant cover.
Holy moly.
It's terrific. That could have been the pick. I just want to mention this briefly, because we've mentioned every issue of Bendis' Superman, that this is the first appearance of Jonathan Kent, the son, in a flashback, and he does not have his voice. Not yet. He's a little kid. He says, succubus.
Yeah, there was a little of that.
He said, there's a couple of things he says that are very way too mature. He calls people gossips, those gossips. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, no.
Still.
I thought we had a deal, Bendis. No kids.
I will say that I actually really like the point of that whole thing.
Oh, I thought this was a terrific issue again.
I mean, that sequence in specific, he's like, so we could do what, John? And he wants him to say it.
Yeah.
And he's basically trying to say...
Well, John's having a tantrum, and he's like, we have all the power for... And these people are making fun of us. Why don't we do something? And he's like, what do you want to do? And he's like, well, something. Well, what? I don't know.
And I really liked the bit. You know, he's like, sometimes I want to pop Batman's head off. Yeah. That was great. Like, and I really feel like something that's special about that relationship is that you don't ever hear Superman talk like that to anybody, but he's going to talk like that to his son of indeterminate age and intelligence.
And current place in the universe.
Yeah. I like that Adam. The Adam was great.
The whole sequence with the Adam and the Flash was terrific. So the Earth is trapped in the Phantom Zone. They have to get it out. So, of course, they turn to the Atom to figure it out. Of course, the Atom wearing his dumb helmet from the New 52. We'll talk about that in a second in the next book. But, of course, he figures it out with some harebrained Atom scheme, and the Flash helps him do it. And
a ton of action, sort of, as you went through that last couple of pages, though. I was really like, wow, this is Superman. But, like, it was. I was like, this is comic book action. This is good stuff. And, of course, they went, you know what was great? That page with Adam Strange in it. Let's do that again.
I'm going to be honest with you. I literally laughed out loud when I turned the page and he was still floating there.
They had a good thing.
I just started laughing in my office.
It's a great page.
We're gonna talk about this as long as it's still good. And I think he's really got a hold on Superman right now.
Yep.
Hawkman number 5, Robert Venditti, Brian Hitch. I wanted to mention because Hawkman and the Atom team up. You don't really need to get into why, but the point is that they draw the Atom in the classic DC Atom costume, and it's terrific. There's no reason to give him an armor and a helmet. None.
Now, going back to look at the helmet.
If you're an old fan, like me, this is a good issue to read, where the Atom is helping Hawkman figure out his journey, because, as we've learned before, he is not only reincarnating through time, but also through space, and also apparently into the Microverse, where Atom is hanging out. So they have a little adventure together, and it's a multi-parter, so that's fun.
I'll tell you what's a lot worse than the Adam's helmet, which I didn't notice was a helmet.
Is?
Whatever the fuck they put on Adam Strange's head.
Well, yeah, I mean.
That's awful.
This is a costume apocalypse we're in the middle of. People want to know what the current age is. It's the current age of terrible costume redesigns.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
There's a Darwin Cook, it's from New Frontier, where Adam Strange is released from Arkham Asylum, and he sort of flies through the air, and that's... Why you don't ever need to do anything other than that. It's perfect. It is ridiculous. He has a fin on his head.
What the hell with aerodynamics?
The fin is what makes it great. Not a helmet with like a thing. The fact that it's a dumbass fin.
He's a 50s spaceman.
I've been reading. He's a 50s spaceman.
Yeah. He should look like it.
Now he's back on Earth. He's going, oh, my old costume was here.
Oh, this was in my closet. I only had the one.
Oh, I got to wear this? Oh, God. Everybody on Rand makes fun of me. I hate this. I have been reading Crowded. I believe I mentioned the first issue. Wait, it wasn't a patron pick, was it?
No, you did. You mentioned the first issue. This is the crowdsource murder or assassination book.
Pretty interesting. I've been enjoying it. I missed the second issue at one point. I caught up, so I was on issue for this one. There's a little bit of a character mystery going on. We still don't know why the one girl has been, you know, targeted by all these people. But I feel like we're really close to knowing, and I'm super curious about it. I like, not the bounty, the protector person from Defend, I think is the name of the app that she comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I like... their relationship is fun and interesting. The two characters, you know, are very opposite. It's in this world, the libraries are a place where you would go to book a room because they're completely abandoned and nobody's there. And so, like, it's like a flop house, basically what public libraries have become.
Hmm.
And nobody will think to look for them because all the libraries installed like internet jamming. So you can't get a signal there or anything. You have to read the books. And so therefore they're safe there. It's an interesting and smart satire, and it's a really good example of world building with a couple of characters in the middle, and also the art's super super energetic and evocative and really fun. It's been a fun ride. It really does remind me of like sort of the kind of books that I think Vertigo should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this feels like.
Right.
I dug it. More Steve Lieber.
More Steve Lieber. Amazing Spider-Man number 4. This is another great issue.
Yeah.
You probably liked it more than I did because this is all about sort of humanizing Boomerang. Boomerang? What is his name?
Yeah. Boomerang. For me, like it seems like it's sort of going back to the well, you know, where Nick Spencer's going to go back and sort of use this character so much. Such a good character. And I can't imagine all that many people read Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
No.
This is so much fun. I have not looked forward to a Spider-Man book being on the stands in forever.
Were you saddened and heartbroken when it was revealed that his buddies were LMDs?
No, I thought that was brilliant. I really loved that bit. It's actually, that's why this is here.
Yeah.
Because that little bit where basically the thing is, he's like, you know, Peter's like, listen, I still talk to Spider-Man sometimes, which is thin, but we just have to live with that disbelief. And you know, we saw you were seen with all your buddies, and he's just like, no, they're life model decoys that I play poker with. And it's the saddest thing ever. That's what he did with whatever resources it took to buy several life model decoys. I have no idea why the Kingpin wants to get Boomerang so badly. I don't know if I missed that. And then there's a mystery villain that comes out at the end who I also don't know or understand, but I don't know if I'm supposed to. Is that, this is like, that villain seems to me like a leftover from the, when the Hand took over Hell's Kitchen. I forget what that
Daredevil was. Yeah, I don't know. And it'll be interesting to see because basically up to this point, Kingpin has been the mainstay of Daredevil. You know, Charles Soule's been... He made Wilson Fisk the mayor. Like, this has all been Daredevil's story. Now
Did Nick Spencer write that Daredevil story? Who wrote that?
No, it's Charles Soule.
No. The Hand, with the Hand, like they take over that whole part of Manhattan. That wasn't Charles Soule, was it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's been doing it for a long time.
No. That was before. Who was on Daredevil before that?
Let's not do this live on the air.
I know, but I think it was a different thing.
Anyway, I don't know who this person is. It's just interesting to see where they... Because I know, I mean, Daredevil's still going after Kingpin, so it'll be interesting to see where Kingpin's story actually happens. But, I mean, you're right. This book is terrific. And, you know, Ryan Otley's great, but I think if Ramos is also great and he could be just the regular artist as well, it'd be fine.
Yeah. No, I don't feel like we missed a step with Ramos coming along. And obviously, I have no problem with some Steve Lieber pages. Steve Lieber should be drawing that thing, quite honestly. But it'd be a different book then.
I don't know if you noticed this week, Josh, but we had about 50% of the books had inkers, which is completely unusual these days.
Yep. That's quite strange.
So those are the books we're going to talk about. But if you're a patron over at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote. Every single patron can vote to add a book to the rundown every week on the show. And this week was a nail biter. We had two books jockeying for position, and the winner was Murder Falcon number 1 from Image Comics, written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson. And he also did the letters, too. Colors by Mike Spicer. This is a Skybound book. I'm really torn about this book, Josh, because there's clearly a wing of Skybound and or Image that really loves these super wacky books like Shirtless Bear Fighter. And this book...
Was that Skybound?
I don't know if it was Skybound, but it was definitely Image. And then there was, going all the way back to the shark one. What was that one? Bear Shark? Shark Bear?
Grizzly Shark versus Sea Bear.
I believe that was your pick of the week, I believe. But the point is, there's this like small wing of the company that does these books that seem like a really funny idea if you're super high. On the other hand, I thought the art was fucking terrific.
Yes.
I loved everything about the art. I was very impressed with the art.
Sea Bear, Grizzly Shark, I wouldn't put in this category because that was just a one-off thing.
No, but it's sort of like similar. You could put them all together. That is sort of this like over the top.
But that also is the kind of thing where like the guy who has been putting in years and years on one of your flagship books just said, can I do this thing? And they were like, all right.
Sure, but what I'm saying is it's still that kind of really over the top goofy animal story.
Yeah, but that one's by two really straight... Anyway, it doesn't matter. So I saw the title and I thought, no. And then I read it for about two pages and I did think, I go, that is really nice art. But I also thought, no. Because he says, I brought metal. And I was rolling my eyes a little. But then I found out I actually had... Because I checked it out basically. Like, should I read this? And then I went, no.
Uh-huh.
And then you people told me I had to, so I said,
fine.
But as I went through it, I did find myself enjoying it more than I expected to.
I thought about you as a Reddit because, you know, you're a guitar player. This guy's a guitar player.
I am.
There's a little essay in the back about how playing guitar has helped Daniel Warren Johnson through the hardest times in his life, and that's kind of what it's about.
I was like, oh, this person understands something about playing music that is genuine. I could tell that.
The story of this book is that there's a dimensional rift, and so there are all these monsters coming through into our world, and there are defenders that can be summoned through the power of music, and Murder Falcon is summoned through the power of metal, played by this dude's magic guitar or whatever it is. The subplot is that he's really depressed. He hasn't played guitar in years, even though he used to be in a semi-successful band, because clearly his wife died, and there's flashbacks to her getting assumed with cancer and dying, and I liked that. That was all really good, and I thought the main character's trauma was interesting. It's the giant Murder Falcon that I don't really care about.
I ended up sort of in the same place in that, I mean, part of me was like, can you just tell me the story of this kid who wanted to be a musician?
You and four people will buy it.
I know. And I recognize that because I've tried to sell that book and it didn't go.
Once you get past the cold open, basically, and you flash to 2 weeks ago and he sat on the bench and his old bandmate gives him a ride and then he goes out to dinner with his neighbor.
That I really like that.
I was like, this is great. I'm all about this story.
Right. and then there's a giant gross spider monster and then the Murder Falcon. And it's just, it's glossing over the human parts that were really interesting to me. But on the other hand, I understand two things. One, it's a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And you should use the medium for what it is best for. And it might be possible that for a lot of people, sort of just human drama is not that thing. Two, if you can draw like this, it's probably more fun to draw. Like, you get to do your story, but also with this, it is innovative and it is interesting, you know, as a way to sort of put something in here that is unexpected. You know, there's clearly an imagination here. But it is also still that, like, here, let's put in a wacky supernatural horror sci-fi whatever thing instead of just telling a story. But, like, the fact is, if that guy just drew this van, I'd buy the book. 'Cause that van is bitching.
It's a great van. I want that van.
I want to paint my truck with these graphics.
The problem is, normally when we talk about the patron pick, I have an idea in my head of what I'm going to rate it.
Oh, yeah, no idea, huh?
I have no idea. So let's do ratings on Murder Falcon number 1 from Daniel Warren Johnson in Image Comics. Out of 5 stars, I mean, I'm kind of struggling with it being almost a 4-star book just because I was so impressed with the art and I thought the human side was really good.
It was. The color's really good.
The color's by Mike Spicer?
Yeah.
I'm going to go, yeah, the blue one, that van is... That van is delicious.
Van is awesome.
I'm going to go 3.95.
Just so everyone at home knows what's going on. If someone writes in at any point to complain about the numbers that we use while rating, those numbers are going to get wacky. Quite a while. And don't do it to make us do it, because I can tell when it's sincere and when it isn't. Yeah. But it's possible that happened lately, and we will stick it to you. I was gonna say 3.5.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say 3.75.
I think that's a totally respectable. I will say this: I first cursed the patrons when they picked it. It's like, oh, fucking shirtless parafighter book, and then I thought it was really impressive, even though it's not necessarily a story I want to read. I was really impressed by it.
It's sincere.
Yeah. And that shines through.
Yeah. And even if I'm not into the part with the giant killer spiders, it's like, well, this is what this guy wanted to do. You know, like there's a truth to that.
It's on a different level. There's a heartfelt nature. It's not completely wacky and goofy. And it's got a really sad undertone to it, which I thought was really well done. That having been said, sticking with it, probably not.
I might.
The van's cool.
The van's cool, and I really do like Murder Falcon's face. I really like how that drawing... That van is fantastic. That's a Sean Murphy-level vehicle right there.
Yeah, that's high praise.
Yeah. Or Mike Huddleston vehicle, if that rings any bells. Butcher Baker, remember that?
Yeah.
Drew the big trucks.
So that's the patron pick at patreon.com/ifanboy. Every single patron can vote on the book, and we thank all those who do. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, we thank you on the show live with a superpower. We're not going to qualify what kind.
Just, oh, God.
A superpower.
You know, he didn't think of a rating? Oh, no.
Do you want me to go first?
Nope.
Okay.
I got this one.
Okay.
Kendall Neck makes perfect cookies. I know that when I try to make homemade chocolate chip cookies, it's not right.
Perfect every time.
Perfect every time. Not too crispy, not too chewy. They don't flatten out. And the thing is that there's a lot of variables.
You have a shitty oven.
Your oven, whether it's inconsistent or just different from the other oven, the pan, I've tried to buy high end, the hollow center baking sheet.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can't do it perfectly. Then my mother-in-law comes along.
Oh, no.
In my living room, bakes a perfect batch of cookies. And my wife's looking at me like, you know, she does it really well every time. And I felt offended because I put time into it and I thought about it. Kendall Neck does not have to worry about any of that. He'd be like, boom. You'd be like, what'd you just do? And he's like, just threw a pinch of baking powder in there. Why'd you do it? He goes, don't worry about it. I got this. Because he's bringing in altitude. He's bringing in the barometer reading.
You don't understand, Josh, is the humidity has affected. So I had to change this, and you're just like, ah!
He's like walking up to the oven. Nothing's even turned on. Giving a little one of these, like, oh, yeah, no. You know what? Bring the salt down on that just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
You'll be sitting there. You're having a conversation. Kitchen smells great. He goes, take them out now.
You know what's great is that, and you have no way of knowing this, is that right before we recorded this, I had dinner, but I didn't get to have my big cookie that came with the delivery. So, really, your timing couldn't have been better.
I like that before you said that came with delivery, and then I pictured a world that every night at 8 p.m., Connor's time for big cookie is right.
All right, so Corey D has the power to communicate with all animals, but only through the playing of a harmonica.
Go on.
He can when he plays the harmonica, the animals understand. It's like he speaks their language through the power of the harmonica. He plays it, they understand what he says.
Does he have a belt like John Popper that has all the different keys? Or is it just one harmonica? And if so, what key is that harmonica in?
He has many harmonicas depending on the genus of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like a sea creature, and I don't know if the genus is the right word. I'm not Ryan Haupt. If it's a sea creature, if it's a woodland creature, if it's a bird.
Kingdom, phylum, genus.
I was going to say phylum, but I didn't know if that was right.
Family.
Either. I didn't do well in science class.
Species. There was a what's the word that you use to remember something?
Anagram?
Mnemonic aid.
Mnemonic device.
Yeah.
The point is you can tell that bird, hey bird, and he can and the bird understands what he's saying.
Is there a specific genre with which he blows his mouth harp?
I mean, it's a little blues travelerly, now that you mention it. Sure.
Uh-huh.
Is there any other genre you can play a harmonica in?
It's a good question. Folk, but even that's just kind of blues. I don't know. Is there a symphonic harmonica?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy. Ask the murder hawk.
Murder hawk.
Is it hawk? I keep saying hawk, but it's not. It's falcon.
It's not. It's murder falcon.
So Corey D can communicate with animals via harmonica.
Turns out that while I stalled that whole time, I did not think of a great idea.
Sometimes an adequate idea is all right.
Even
a less than stellar one.
People out there might not know that I am trained to a very small extent in the arts of improv, which is why right now I'm going to tell you that what Eric Wood does is that he can use any vehicle in an extreme off-road situation.
Here's what I love about this. My next power is also vehicle-based, but we did not coordinate that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So say that. He's driving along one night. Best car he's got. It's a 96 Cavalier.
Right.
But he's got to cut through.
Wide wheelbase.
Up and over a mountain. Now, most people, you wouldn't want to take the Cavalier under those circumstances.
No.
The wheels are not big enough. The ground clearance is abysmal. We're not even talking about power. It's a front wheel drive. You're asking to be stuck in the mud almost instantly. None of this is a problem for Eric. Eric just knows exactly how to handle it. Some vehicles, some more modern vehicles, have computerized traction control where it applies just the right amount of drive to this wheel, a little brake to that one to make sure that you always have the maximum traction. Eric just does that with just his regular foot pedals. It's supernatural is what it is.
RC Gamut can turn RC's car intangible, thus negating traffic.
Would he not just do that? So he would do that as a default on any trip.
No, it can just, it's like you put your hand on the car and it turns intangible. Also, it's not always intangible, but it can go that way. Because sometimes you don't want it to be intangible.
What would be an example of that?
Like you're sitting in a traffic light and people walk through you because they can. It's annoying.
You don't want that? Is it? No. I bet it feels weird.
Yeah, it's
I bet
like, oh, no, come on.
Hurt me, but it's invasive.
Plus, people can stick their face in your car and look around. So, you know, sitting on the 405, maybe.
Okay. Well, why would he be sitting on the 405 if he could turn the car intangible and then just go through traffic?
It's just instinct. There wasn't supposed to be traffic.
I begin to suspect that this wasn't a well thought. No. I see a great deal of benefit from that.
I mean, theoretically, you could turn the car intangible and just drive straight, literally straight to your location through buildings and trees and cars and people.
I bet RC is not a great parallel parker, but in the end, the car is exactly where it needs to be.
Oh, for sure. Just drive up the street through the cars.
If you gave him a regular car, it would be awful. But the fact that it's intended is like he gets exactly where it needs to be, then, you know, firms it up, walks away, good to go.
Hasn't parallel parked for real since the driving test.
I have not parallel parked since I got my truck.
I can imagine that. You just drive over people to get to your spot.
Yeah, I park. Yeah, I have to look for big spots.
You take two spots at a time?
No, I haven't done that. I wouldn't do that. That's awful.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's how you can help us out. You can by donating, and you can vote in the patron pick. You can get your patron power at a certain level, and also you can help us reach our next stretch goal, which we've talked about. We added a new feature to the next stretch goal. The original stretch goal is still in play, which is a monthly non-comics media podcast, in which Josh and I will talk about something from media outside of comics. We've already promised the first one will be our epic debate about Almost Famous, which Josh hates and I love. And then the second second feature of that goal is we will add all of the missing full-length and mini iFanboy video shows to our YouTube channel. There's about, I don't know, 3 years, 2 years worth of shows that
we're saying that there are two
for one. It's a twofer.
Wow.
It's a two for one. So all those shows that are missing that you may have seen or may not have seen, if you're a new listener, you don't know, we did a video show for very many years. About half of them got taken off the web by people who used to distribute the show, and now we'll put them back for you if you hit the next stretch goal. So that's how you can help us out directly. Also, ifanboy.threadless.com. You can find our t-shirts and our mugs and our bath mats and our shower curtains and all kinds of things have our designs on them. The most popular one, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, is still selling like hotcakes. It's by far our number one seller. So we thank everyone who buys a t-shirt or a mug. ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out directly via PayPal. And ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can help us out by checking out the books we talk about in the Booksplode, as well as a general link to Amazon. Everyone who helps us out through all the various means, we do thank you very much. Hey, we got voicemails.
Hey guys, it's Brad from New Hampshire, and here's what I'm thinking about. I've been a comics reader for over 40 years and a music fan for over 30, and vinyl records have made a comeback. In the last 10 years, vinyl has become the cool way to listen to music now. It's hip to buy records again. So my theory is that old-fashioned printed comics could make a comeback the same way vinyl albums have. I think the old floppy comics are analogous to vinyl LPs in a lot of ways. Trends do tend to loop back on themselves. What is out of fashion today becomes the next hipster trend. Let me know what you think.
So is that how you all sound in New Hampshire, Josh? Like, ready for radio?
With excellent recording?
I mean, geez. Yeah.
You know what? If they all sounded that good, it'd be a better world. This is clearly a person who appreciates fidelity.
The jokes you make about New Hampshire accents didn't come through from Brad's voicemail.
Nope. It's excellent. Some New Englanders eschew the sound of the accent, and they have wonderful diction.
Well, you've never know. I lived in New York either. So.
It's a good point. Yeah, I talk like the people on TV, and so do you.
So, will comics make a comeback like vinyl has made a comeback? So, before we get into it, I'm not sure if he means comics in general or just the paper version.
I don't think... Well, okay, it may not surprise any of you listening to know that I am aware of these topics.
Sure, we both buy vinyl all the time.
Yes, yeah. And I'm not new to it. I've been doing so for quite a while. And I obviously get comics too. I think they're the same people.
Let's take it as he means comics in general, not paper, because that wouldn't make any sense because paper is the dominant medium. Let's talk comics in general.
Right. No. And the reason I say this, I think that it's the same people buying them. And I don't mean to say like they're the exact same people, but the kind of people who read comics are the kind of people buying comics. And the kind of people who want to listen to music in a specific way like that are the people who are buying the records. And now there's a basis for that. There's an infrastructure. There's
my no is similar, but it's more basic. It's that music is way more popular than comics. This is just it's not like music went away and came back. It's just this form of listening to it, whereas comics are a different medium entirely. So it's not like people were reading comics in a different way and now they're going to come back to paper. It's not exactly a comparable analogy.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, because you're right, is that comics didn't... Yeah, like music never went away. That wasn't a thing. Comics, like the overall readership is shrinking and shrinking. But I think what it is that... So the kind of music listener who then went looking for that vinyl experience... person who is reading comics still. So it wasn't like there was, I guess, a large population of people who were reading comics at one point.
Yep.
That was the 70s.
And before.
And 60s.
Yeah.
You know, and then
yeah.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But, you know, like, they all left to do other things as more media became available. If you think about, you know, like, as home video became a thing and cable channels and there was just all of this other stuff, then the sort of value that they got back for reading comic books shrank and went away. And to a large extent, that has been replaced by comic book movies. And they went, oh, good, I get my fix of this thing I liked, but I don't have to buy the books. I can see the movies. So the only people left are the enthusiasts. Whereas out of music, the people buying the vinyl are the enthusiasts. They're that group. Does that make sense?
So you're saying the comic reader is the vinyl buyer you just never had the other thing happen.
You did, but they're gone.
No, what I mean is there's never like, it's not like at one point everyone in comics went to read them digitally and then they're like, oh, I missed paper, and they went came back.
That's, they just went and did something else. They stopped reading comic books altogether. People didn't stop listening to music. They still listen to it on the radio, or they have their MP3s, or they stream, or they, you know, whatever. But the people just stop reading comics. So then what you're left with is the people buy vinyl and the people who are still buying comics.
So I could see a thing wherein theoretically in 50 years, people who – and comics are no longer in paper. People would say, oh, I want to go back to reading on paper. But again, you wouldn't print them because the economics of printing a comic versus printing an album are completely different. And it's not exactly a one-to-one.
It isn't, but I do think that there's a
but
similar.
You're right. It's a similar subset of each genre.
It's a similar drive. I think one of the things that I noticed when I started buying records quite a while. I've got records that I bought, you know, well over a decade ago. I didn't really get into it too much because honestly, I moved out of LA and I didn't have great record stores around and I didn't really have anywhere to put them, so I sort of put that on hold. But in that sort of interim, like, records became a thing, and all of a sudden everybody is reissuing and putting them out. Yep. and you can buy them. And I was flipping through records one day, and I had been so inured into digital music and the convenience of it. And it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's wonderful. But the idea of like holding the tangible thing and also having to make a choice.
It's a different relationship to music when you have to actually go and put it on and flip it over and you only get a certain number of songs. You can't just keep switching endlessly through music. You have to really choose to want to listen to an album.
And you're choosing what you – I mean, this is – it's funny because when I was a kid, I was annoyed because I couldn't afford all the CDs I wanted, so I had to make a choice. But now I have to do that again, but it's for a completely different reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I had to make a choice then because I wanted all this stuff, but I couldn't get it. Now I have to make a choice because I have everything. And so when I buy a record, I kind of make sure that it's a record it's something I love, or that there's some reason that I'm buying it. And I feel like that's very close to people who are still buying paper comics in a collector sense.
Yep.
You know, like no, I want to own this thing. It's sort of how you, I don't think, are so much, but you were with trades. You know, like, oh, this is a thing I want in my library
I still am.
A thing. Yeah. But that's the same instinct, I think.
Sure.
So there's definitely a relationship there.
There's a relationship. It's just that comics don't have the digital. Comics have a digital side, obviously, but it's the niche part of the hobby, not the other way around. Let's do one quick one.
Hey, iFanboy guys. It's Drew from Ohio. I'm curious about the patron picks and if you've been tracking the breakdown of publishers. Most of them seem to be indie-focused, which I think is awesome. Some real obscure and cool stuff in there. And I would love to know, you know, kind of what the breakdown has been across the various publishers that have been patron picks. Thanks. Great show.
We appreciate every voicemail we get, even ones recorded at a hangar at a jet repair shop. Drew, talk to Brad. So let's... Drew, you asked for stats, and... You know, I'll oblige. You don't have to ask me more than once. I had not been tracking the patron picks. I do track normally the regular picks, and this was a discussion. Where was it? In the patron hang? No, it was in the 650 episode, right? About bringing that back. Anyway, I did this for you today, Drew, just especially for you. So I only did this year's patron picks, and this is just some really quick stats from them. There's been 45 books. We've had 3 ties this year. One of them was a 3-way tie. So there's a couple of extra books. It hasn't been 45 weeks, but 45 books have been patron pick. And I think I was surprised, and I think Drew will be surprised by the numbers here. Because I think there's been a feeling that the patron pick is mostly image number ones. Do you have that feeling? Have you had that feeling in the past?
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be.
It's certainly a discussion on the patron page and on the Facebook group.
It's that, or I think that they're like big mainstream issues tend to get votes, because I think that there's a, you tell me if this is true with stats, I think that there's a fear that we're not going to read it.
That could be, and that's true. So let's talk about the stats real quick. There's only a couple of stats I took. So out of the 45 books, 37 or 82% were number one issues. Josh, there hasn't been a comic as the patron pick that was not a number one since June.
Wow. That really speaks to the sort of immense glut of product.
The last 17 patron picks have been number one issues.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you add, I mean, if you go back to April, the April 4th pick, which was Xerxes' number one, there's only been 2 books in that time frame that were not number ones. And they were the same week. It was a tie.
So it speaks to a glut of new product, but it also speaks to a thirst of the patrons, at least.
For us to check out a new book.
Yeah. They wanted to know if the new stuff coming on is worth the time, or at least have a better understanding of what it is. It's almost like they're using us for market research.
So this is where I think Drew will find it most interesting. Marvel was the most picked publisher, with 15 out of 45, or 33% of the picks have been Marvel books. Mm-hmm. DC has had 10 of the 45, which is 22%, which together makes 55%. So just over half of the books chosen at Marvel or DC, unless you add in the 2 books that were DC crossovers with other companies published, like Archie Meets Batman 66 and Batman the Max. Those were both published by Archie and IDW respectively, but they were also co-published by DC. So really, DC had 12, which is 26%, which is 60% of the books have been Marvel or DC, which is way more than I thought it was going to be. Image had 10 for 22%. Dark Horse had 5 for 11%. IDW had 3 for 6%. Archie had 1 for 2%. And Boom had 1 for 2%. I mean, it's 82% when you take in Marvel, DC, and Image.
Do you think that is because people aren't seeing what they want out of some of the other higher tier indie publishers?
I don't know.
Like, for me, I genuinely scan those listings every week, and I genuinely rarely find something I want to read.
Yeah, I go all the way through the entire Diamond list every week. I don't find personally that the talent is as spread out as it once was. It's really concentrated in 3 to 4 to 5 companies, and mm-hmm. mostly at the top 3. And I want to be reading the talent that I think is really good. There's a lot of people that are making comics, and they're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting. I thought it is. I mean, you've got books like West Coast Avengers, and you have Cosmic Ghost Rider. The Immortal Hulk was a patron pick. Black Panther was a patron pick. Venom. So, I mean, you got a lot of big books. Hunt for Wolverine, mm-hmm. Mighty Thor. But then you get books like The Seeds, Black Badge, Bully Wars, Maneaters.
Yeah.
So there is a real spectrum, but I was a little surprised. I mean, Image wasn't a patron pick until February 14th. Before that, it was all Marvel. And I'm sorry, that's wrong. It was in the first. Ice Cream Man was January. But there's only a couple of Images until you get to like April, and then it just then mm-hmm. doesn't. But, you know, it's interesting. It is interesting what gets votes and what doesn't.
It is interesting.
Mm-hmm. So thank you to Brad and to Drew for recording a voicemail and sending it into contact@fanboy.com. You can do that if you want to get on the show. You don't have to just write us an email. You can also send a voicemail. And if you do a voicemail, 30 to 40 seconds is about the ideal time. So keep that in mind when you're recording. But we'll take anything. We had some other voicemails that we didn't get on the show, but thanks for sending them in. And also all the emails we get. We wish we could do them all, but we can't.
If I may follow up on something from earlier.
Yeah.
Shadowland was the name of the storyline in which the west side of Manhattan was taken over by the Hand.
Who
completely.
Was that?
Written by Andy Diggle.
Right. Right.
That was 8 years ago.
Ouch. Ouch.
And the god of the Hand is known as the Beast. The Beast of the Hand. He's a demon that is worshipped by the Hand, the Snake Root Clan, and the True Believers. And I believe that might be the character in Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, we'll find out.
I guess we will.
So, Josh, do we have upcoming shows?
I mean, we should, right? That should be a thing. I know that we did have a Booksplode on Superman Blue, mm-hmm. Volume 1, where we talked about the coming of the blue Superman costume and the greatness of these late 90s DC comic books that maybe we were not able to appreciate at the time. Mm-hmm. I know that was a thing.
Sure.
I know that there is a Talksplode coming up close to the end of the month. I know who it's going to be. I do not announce who the person is until after I have that recorded. Trust me.
Because you're a professional.
It's been a good policy, it turns out. Because I've wanted to tell you many times about somebody who never ended up being on the show. So that will be a thing. That's, of course, a patron reward. So look forward to that before the end of October.
You can stop asking. We are not doing a Venom show. Clearly, you're not listening through the show all the way to the end, because we've mentioned that probably 10 shows in a row.
We say at the end of the show.
We're not doing a Venom show. We're not doing a Titans show. We're not doing a Daredevil Season 3 show. The next special edition show, I believe, will be Spider-Man to the Spider-Verse. So you can look forward to that. But I did want to mention really briefly, I'll talk about it more next week. I had a book come out, a comic book come out, sort of. I edited a book for my company, my day job. We're an entertainment company with a lot of divisions, one of which is a video game division, one of which is a publisher, and I work for the publisher. And we did a comic based on one of the video games we're doing, one of the video game teams doing. And it's called Dreadnought Legends, #1. And it's available now on Steam. If you go and download Dreadnought, which is free to play, you can find it in a bundle. It's $1.99. And I got some of our old friends to work on it. Paul Montgomery, our old co-host, co-wrote it with Dave Acampo, our old friend who did some work for iFanboy. And we got these great artists out of Brazil, Priscila Petralis, and Marco Lesko did the art, and Dave Sienkiewicz did the cover, which was crazy.
Or Bill Sienkiewicz might have
also. Dave was Bill's cheaper cousin. I don't know why I said Dave.
You blew your biggest moment in the whole thing.
Dave Sienkiewicz. Wow. Interesting.
I'm very proud of you. I didn't even know you knew how to do any of that.
So Bill Sienkiewicz did the cover. He was great.
I would love it if at that moment you went, oh,
shit. So
that did not look like I was expecting it, to be honest.
Check it out on Steam. If you're a gamer, you know what Steam is. You can play Dreadnought for free, and you can get the comic in a bundle. And then next week, we're going to talk about it some more, and it might be available in other places too. So we'll talk about that next week.
Awesome.
In the meantime, head over to fanboy.com, find all of our podcasts, find all of our special editions and our Booksplodes and Talksplodes and everything we've done in the last, 10 years of our lives is on there, so you can check that out there. Find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking iFanboy at facebook.com/iFanboy and following iFanboy on Twitter, and follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
The way this engine runs, it's not by massive marketing budgets that are controlled by a corporation.
No.
And their marketing arm who's trying to get our brand off into everywhere. That's not how it happens at all.
Nope.
It's little things like you leave a review of the shows you like, whether it be this podcast or another podcast. You know, those iTunes reviews, star ratings, written reviews, those are a big deal. And of course, we appreciate everybody who's done that. A long time ago, we had this sort of competition with the now defunct podcast around comics.
Well, clearly we won. Or did they win? Think about it.
It's like the Roman Empire versus, you know, like a small village in Mesopotamia at this point. We trounced them.
We trounced them, but then they're free.
That is an excellent point. As far as I understand, they're all happy people living private individual lives.
Right.
And I talked to Chris Niesman from time to time. He doesn't seem to miss it. It's not. I don't get a sense of regret from that. I get a sense of calm, a sense of peace.
He's got free time.
He's happy. Just, it's strange. I joke. I do miss those guys. I would, if there was still a comics podcast by them, I would actually listen to that.
Yep.
Anyway, the point being, that is how that works. Your word of mouth, using social media, using actual words in person to people and recommending the shows and passing them around. Just like you would with any show. If you find a thing you really like. I had shared my local NPR station, started a true crime podcast called Bear Brook, and it is excellent, and I want everyone to know about it.
This is not fictional. It's true.
It's non-fictional.
That's what the word true means, Connor.
Yeah, true cream.
Yeah.
True cream. True wow. cream.
Dave loves that true cream.
Kevin was telling me about his comic True Cream, which...
You got to get the true cream on your car.
He did it with Gene Chaykin.
Jeez. Oh, God. It's been a long couple months, guys.
Yeah.
So...
That was all for- Some people don't listen to the end.
And they blew it.
And I don't know why. It's the best part of the show.
So, and until next time, I'm Connor.
Bill over here.
You invite me into your house. And then you say you gotta pay for what you break. Going back to Kansas City.